Good evening, everybody. Question. How many of you have heard of the curse of the Bambino? Raise your hand. Okay. Well, if you're a baseball fan, you probably have. It sounds like most of you have. If you're a Boston Red Sox fan, you definitely have. This is how the curse, or the alleged curse, came about. Before Babe Ruth was a Yankee, he played for the Boston Red Sox. They were a great team. This was back in 1910, 1912, 1915. They actually won the first World Series. The Red Sox did. They won five of the first 15 World Series. In 1920, Babe Ruth is sold to the Yankees. And for the next 82 years, the Red Sox did not win a World Series. In that same time, the Yankees won 26. The Yankees won twice as many World Series as any other Major League team. As a Met fan, it pains me to admit that, but they're just the facts. Over 86 seasons, the Yankees won 26 World Series, and the Red Sox won none. So, man, if there was ever the possibility of a curse being true, I mean, seems like that one, there might be something to it, because it was just kind of remarkable, the timing, the Red Sox success, getting rid of Babe Ruth, and then kind of a collapse for so many years. I had a friend of mine, a buddy of mine in college, who was from, not Boston, I think he was from Worcester, Massachusetts, but he was a big Red Sox fan. And I think he believed in the curse. I think he really did. I was with him in 1986 when the Mets beat the Red Sox. It was kind of hard to believe that they lost it, the Red Sox. I remember him telling me about his father, who was a bigger Red Sox fan than he was. And he was born like in 1930, maybe. So for his entire life, the Red Sox never won. They eventually won it, I think it was in 2004. His father had died a year or two prior. So in his whole life, he never saw them win. Anyway, he sent me, his son, my friend, sent me, he gave the eulogy at his dad's funeral. And he sent it to me, and it was great. It was very well done. He talked about fidelity, his father's fidelity, to those he loved and the things he loved. Much more those than things. Much more people than stuff. Anyway, in the course of this eulogy, he talked about the curse. And he kind of used it tongue-in-cheek in sort of a springboard to talk about his dad. He said his father just never stopped being a fan. He never walked away from the struggles. His fidelity to the Red Sox was like unshakable. He talked about how he endured terrible seasons. some great seasons that just had heartbreaking loss at the last minute. But he never left them. He never denied being one of them. He stayed in the fight. And then he gave examples in the course of this eulogy from his great life. Examples much more important than being a baseball fan. Staying in the fight during losing seasons, maybe even a lifetime of losing seasons. Staying in the fight. That's a good thing. That's a noble thing. Joseph of Arimathea, he goes to Pilate. He says, can I have his body? Can I take his body? To honor it and prepare it. After this unspeakable loss, unimaginable grief, when almost everybody else split, not everybody, but most, Joseph stayed. He remained faithful in the darkest season. Are you ever tempted to quit? Does discouragement ever strangle your passion? Maybe it's people you love who just disappoint in kind of crushing ways, deflating ways. Maybe it's your kids or friends who've just checked out. They've checked out of things that they used to be such a part of, that were so important to them at one point. Places like here have become for them like a museum at best, like a ruin, a relic from like some yesterday. It's so not a part of where they are now. Certain values and principles that you still hold, they once held, they've kind of walked away from them. It seems like they have. They have. And in frustration and discouragement, are you ever tempted to join them? Join the exodus. But you don't. You didn't. You haven't. Because you're here. We're here. Joseph of Arimathea didn't. The women at Jesus' side didn't. Mary didn't. But almost everybody else did. I remember doing this college retreat once. I was at St. Anthony's High School. I was still working at the high school, but we had offered a retreat for alumni. So these were now kids that were in college, and we invited them to kind of do a weekend retreat. It was out in Shelter Island. It was a guys' weekend. We had a great turnout. Maybe, I don't know, 35 guys came back, mostly college freshmen and sophomores, I guess. We began the evening, or the retreat, the first night, we showed the movie Braveheart. And It's definitely a guy movie. So like a lot of violence in it and a little bit of romance, but more fight than anything. It's also inspiring, and I'd say challenging. Mel Gibson, he plays William Wallace, the 13th century Scottish warrior, and he leads Scotland in their first war for independence. There's another character, secondary character in it, but he's kind of critical. His name is Robert the Bruce. He's a noble, he's a Scotsman, he's a lord. He's the son of a king. So he's conflicted because he totally believes in Wallace. And he knows Scotland should be free. But if they go up against the crown, he and his noble family will lose their power. So he's torn between what his father wants and what his heart, what he knows is true. Anyway, he betrays him. And Wallace, Mel Gibson, he's captured and ultimately tortured and executed. It's very biblical. If you watch it, it's like total parallels to the Passion story. 10 years later, he made The Passion. But this was almost like a precursor. It's like a passion parable. Betrayal. People hiding in the shadows who were disciples in a sense. They were followers. And they quit during a very dark day in a dark season. They stopped being fans and they left. So there's just total defeat, total desolation. It's an absolute Good Friday moment. The hero's been taken away. The corrupt king, the emperor has won one more time. And the followers have been scattered. They're shameful and afraid. It's a great scene right at the end. They gather on this field. You got the British army and these Scots rebels. And they've gathered for this basically surrender. And this Robert the Bruce, he's working for the king. So he's now with the Scotsmen and he's preparing to go to the English leadership and surrender. And at the last minute, he turns to the rebels. And he says, you bled with Wallace. Now bleed with me. And they look, they can't believe what he's saying. They're like, are you kidding? We're going to keep fighting? Wallace is gone. Braveheart's been finished. And they fight. The movie won everything. It won Best Picture, Best Director. It's a huge success in the box office. One critique of the movie that I consistently heard was that it wasn't... They took liberties historically. Like, it's not all completely true. They added stuff to make for good drama. That's okay, right? And I believe never let the truth get in the way of a good story. I certainly believe that. But our story, the story of today, this story, this one is ours, and it is true. At the end of the movie, Wallace is dead. And they charge the fields for this, where they think it's just gonna be a surrender. There's now a fight, and the British are like stunned. They can't believe it. And then you hear Mel Gibson, Braveheart, you hear Wallace's voice, and this is what he says. In the year of our Lord, 1314, patriots of Scotland, starving and outnumbered, charged the fields of Bannockburn. They fought like warrior poets. They fought like Scotsmen, and they won their freedom. So on this Good Friday night, let's be honest with ourselves. If there's some fight that you've kind of walked away from, because you've gotten tired of too many losing seasons, get back in the fight and win your freedom.